Hi, and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest updates in dermatology, to exclusive interviews with leading industry experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes. I'm your host, Morgan Petronelli, and today we're going to be discussing a recent presentation at the First American Academy of Dermatology virtual meeting, which takes a look at cannabinoids in dermatology. Let's dive right in. Today I have joining me Dr. Adam Friedman, Professor and Interim Chair of Dermatology at George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Well, thank you, Dr. Adam Friedman, for joining us today. So I know you covered a variety of topics in your presentation, but for those who did not attend the virtual meeting, can you give us, our listeners, a quick synopsis?
Sure. So the purpose of my talk at the annual, I guess, first ever virtual academy meeting was to really find a buffet of all the exciting options in the world of cannabinoids as it relates to dermatology. But because this is a fledgling field, really new space for many, and we actually have data showing that there really is a lack of understanding this area, and for good reason, it's relatively new, I really walked the attendees through the history of cannabinoids in medicine, both in traditional holistic and even allopathic medicine, and then really narrowed in, focused on where the potential is in the management of both inflammatory and even potentially neoplastic skin diseases.
You mentioned some inflammatory skin diseases and the cannabinoids could possibly treat in your presentation. Do you mind diving into that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to understand how cannabinoids in general, and I think it's important to define the different types, can be useful for inflammatory skin disease, which I think, truthfully, they have extraordinary potential, both from a skin-targeted perspective, but even from a systemic perspective. You got to understand what they're manipulating and what they're utilizing in our own systems, and that's our inherent endocannabinoid system. So as we're talking right now, you and I are both churning out endocannabinoids. These are cannabinoids that we make rapid-fire, on-demand. These are derived from arachidonic acid, and they are mobilized for a whole host of different biological activities. Probably the easiest way or the most relevant example would be nerve transduction, so sending signals throughout the peripheral and central nervous system. As a signal comes down and you're hitting the end of the pre-terminal synapse, you know, the first part of that, you know, kind of telephone wire, factors are sent across this chasm to the other side, and they hit their receptors to then kind of send that signal forward. But in order to stop that signal, in order to make sure that you're not perpetuating a feeling of itch or pain, in that case, calcium levels in that cell increase, and you start making endocannabinoids, which then go backwards, hit the cell behind it, to then shut it down. And so it's a very linear and very tightly regimented and controlled process. Now, one can imagine if something were to go wrong with that mobilization, you could see how someone could have perpetual itch, perpetual pain. And that's just one of many, many examples. Beyond that, if we think more about the skin and the various cell types, whether it be keratinocytes, melanocytes, you know, follicular epithelium, adnexal cells, you know, apocrine, eccrine, sebaceous, you know, even innate immune cells in the skin, all of these express receptors for these endocannabinoids, these arachidonic acid derivatives. Probably the best one studied is anandamide, or the abbreviation is AEA. All these express receptors for these. Many of these cells can actually make endocannabinoids, and inherently in the skin, there is a system for breaking down endocannabinoids. And so if you think about from those three categories, you got your goods, the actual endocannabinoids, you have their receptacles, their receivers, or the receptors, and then you have the kind of checkpoints, the overarching machinery that will break it down when it's no longer needed. That sounds like any other system in our body. And so this system tightly regulates the control of every possible biological action in the skin, and I would argue probably throughout the body as well. Now, we know when these systems are dysfunctional, that's when we start to see pathology, and that's where we see the emergence of relentless inflammation, you know, whether it be auto-inflammatory or, you know, autoimmune, you know, attacking self or just can't turn off inflammation, whether it be unrestricted cell growth, which is probably the most simplest way of describing cancer. I would argue the endocannabinoid system is certainly involved in this, meaning that there's probably dysfunction that leads to this. And we have some evidence to support this. Systemic lupus, for example, is the first well-described inflammatory disease that results in part from dysfunction of the endocannabinoid system. And I imagine we're going to start to see a lot more of that as time goes on in terms of where there's dysfunction. And therefore, if you have a dysfunctional system, can we from the outside in manipulate that system to then regain balance? And that's a loaded question. The answer is obviously yes. And so there are kind of three categories of cannabinoids you can think of. You could utilize what we already make, endocannabinoids, and things like anandamide or 2-AG. These are readily available. Probably we all know about the plant-derived cannabinoids, phytocannabinoids, like THC, CBD are the two best known, but those are two of several hundred that are comprised within the cannabis plant. And to me, what I think probably makes the most sense are synthetic cannabinoids. You know, and I know the term synthetic often elicits this kind of, feeling of needing to hug a tree and like, oh my God, synthetic is bad and chemicals are bad. And that's totally BS, because they're not, because it's purposeful development of what we understand from nature and making it better. Nature is imperfect. Nature makes mistakes. So I think synthetic cannabinoids will take the best of what we understand about endo and phytocannabinoids and create something meaningful. And we're already starting to see that in the pipeline. But I think sky's the limit when it comes to manipulating the system in the skin and the body to ultimately result in better outcomes.
And so with that, you talked about the benefits in clinical dermatology. Are there any known benefits of cannabinoids in skincare now that its implementation in those products is on the rise?
So I can't really answer that, unfortunately. I think in an ideal world, the answer is yes. And, you know, and this kind of goes into the rapidly changing regulatory landscape. So with the Farm Bill going into effect, I want to say now, about 2 years ago, this made hemp-derived products legal. And so you can then take cannabinoids derived from hemp, which has very low concentrations, mind you. You know, hemp is not really the part of the plant. It's really the flower of the plant that has the majority of these cannabinoids. But you can certainly get, non-psychoactive cannabinoids like CBD from hemp. All of a sudden, countless brands emerge in every space, even beyond skincare, you know, touting CBD heavy or CBD derived products from anything from, to your point, skincare, to menstrual pain, to back pain, to relaxation. It went bonkers. And that's actually problematic, because where's your quality assurance? And the FDA has been working on this. There have been several meetings and actually a good number of warning letters to companies making claims that are completely inappropriate based on the fact that these are over-the-counter products. The other part about quality assurance, so forgetting even like making lofty claims that can't be backed up by any science whatsoever, there have been studies showing that many of these products don't even contain the ingredients that are listed on the label. And honestly, what regulatory body has the bandwidth to chase after every mom-and-pop internet-based, you know, company that is now pushing forward the latest and greatest cream that's going to cure all ailments? At that point, there's this guy, Rick Simpson, who's wanted in multiple countries because he was touting this cannabis oil, I believe a CBD-heavy oil, that he said could cure all cancer. Not one cancer, not melanoma, not just, not renal cell carcinoma, but it could cure every single cancer, which is absurd because all cancers are unique in their molecular makeup. So that's an extreme example. But at the same time, we have to be mindful that because there's so much hype around this space, because people are willing to pay the money, there's no pressure on these companies to actually back up their claims or their products with any legitimate science. And that's a real problem. It also undermines the true scientific efforts, which are certainly coming out. Going back to dermatology, there are several companies that are already into phase two studies for topical formulations of CBD going after acne and eczema or atopic dermatitis. They're oral synthetics that are in late phase three studies for diseases like scleroderma and dermatomyositis. And so when you have these products that are very forward facing and really fail to meet our expectations, it really undermines the rapidly emerging science and efforts by those who are doing it the right way. So I want to encourage everyone to not be dismissive or not, you know, kind of just, you know, brush off this whole space because you have a few bad actors. Rather, I think there's a lot of good science coming out, but we have a lot of catching up to do given how long it's taken to get to this point and really be able to explore the space in a safe and legal manner.
You know, and since hemp has been declared federally legal in all 50 states since the passage of the Farm Bill in, you know, 2018, do you see a future for widespread implementation of medical marijuana instead of just hemp in dermatologic products and skincare? What do you think?
Yeah, so the setup right now, and the question I always get is, you know, how do you prescribe medical marijuana? And the answer is you can't. It's you write a letter recommendation. So we know that over two-thirds of the country now have legalized medical marijuana. And what that means is as a physician or a practitioner who has met the requirements of the state, because by state it is different. Certain states require certification through various online educational initiatives, and I'm sure those are changing yearly or even faster than that. So if you were able to write a recommendation, meaning you have an account with the Department of Health for that state, you can make a recommendation. Depending on the state, you could actually dictate how much THC someone could actually get in whatever formulation they get it in. But once again, it is a state-by-state thing. Once you sign off on that, the patient then takes their car to a dispensary, and you really have very little oversight. I mean, you can certainly give guidance, so kind of hard these days, given we don't really have any clinical evidence. Most of our evidence is preclinical in animals. We have some early clinical trials, but we really don't have a lot of experience in terms of what concentrations of what ratios of which cannabinoids are best for which indication. Our hope is that, of course, these dispensaries have some experience, anecdotal or whatever, but, you know, we could give some guidance. But once the patient goes to there, it's really the people in the dispensary that will dictate what they receive, whether it's something topical, whether it's something oral. You know, to the point of oral and all these over-the-counter CBD lines, technically oral CBD is illegal from an over-the-counter perspective because there's an FDA-approved drug, Epidiolex, which is for two forms of seizure disorders. And so if you have an oral prescription drug, you can't sell that same substance in an oral formulation over-the-counter because by definition, you're selling a RX drug that's FDA approved over the counter. So I think we're going to see the FDA really revving up their efforts to go after oral supplements that contain CBD. Topical, they're not really focusing on just yet, but I think that's something to certainly consider. But of course, from the dispensary perspective, that is a more regulated environment, so you can certainly get things through that pathway in a legal course, so long as it's legal in your state. To the point of topicals and how that could possibly be useful, even if you're targeting the skin with a topical, one of the limitations and a major limitation of that is penetration. You know, these cannabinoids, and it varies from cannabinoid to cannabinoid, but they're all uniformly lipophilic, meaning they like fatty environments. And that is a real difficulty when it comes to formulations, because that means you have to suspend your cannabinoid in a lipid-rich vehicle, which can be greasy or thick and goopy and occlusive, but also its ability to penetrate the outer layer, the stratum corneum, is also going to be limited because that's also a fatty environment. So your active agent will get caught up in that top layer, won't be able to get through. And so that's why a lot of these topical formulations may not do a whole lot because they can't actually get through the skin. So in this case, the vehicle is almost just as important as the active, because if you don't purposely design the vehicle, it's just going to sit on top. And I get the question all the time, if I use a topical THC, a topical CBD, will I get a positive drug test for my employment? And the likelihood of that is, based on the formulations available, is probably no. And there have been some studies looking at penetration of topically applied cannabinoids to the skin, and you don't get systemic absorption, going back to the chemical properties of these ingredients. They just don't get through. So that's where meaningful design of topical agents in terms of unique vehicles, whether it be nanoparticles, micelles, is really going to be very important to really capitalize on topical formulations, which I can guarantee you these internet-based companies that are working out of their backyard probably do not have the wherewithal to really develop.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned in your presentation about patients expressing, you know, a need for more cannabinoids, you know, products for inflammatory diseases, anything like that, where they have asked their provider, you know, more about that. Why do you think dermatologists have opted not to recommend products containing cannabinoids?
Well, the easiest answer to that would be just a discomfort with the subject matter. You know, I think that, and actually between the time of the original study that we did here at GW, led by one of our former residents, Liz Robinson, where we surveyed dermatologists about their comfort level and their fund of knowledge and perceptions related to cannabinoids in dermatology, we generated a lot of interesting data, but some of the most meaningful data was that most did not feel comfortable with what they knew, and actually a good percentage didn't know that CBD is non-psychoactive, which kind of fits with that. But they thought that this could be very exciting. There was a lot of interest. And also a good number of respondents said that they had been asked about it by patients within the last year. And I can tell you as a physician, or any practitioner will say, no one wants to come across as knowledgeable or not in the know when a patient asks a question. You know, they're coming to us as experts. If we're put in a position where we don't know what's going on, that's not a good look. You know, that's not a good look for us. So I think it's more that this is a new area, and there hasn't been, in general medicine, not even just in dermatology, but in general, there hasn't been a lot of good education on this or research on this. That's changing. Obviously, you know, this was a lecture at the Virtual Academy meeting that we're talking about. I've had the opportunity to lecture on this in several forums, both national, international, local. I know there are others interested in this space who are lecturing on it, publishing on it. You know, there's just a recent nice review in the JAD on the use of cannabinoids for pruritus. So I think it's changing. I think from the time when we first did the study several years ago to now, there's been much more in both mainstream, peer-reviewed, pulmonative literature, and even in kind of more of the lay dermatology literature and news, there's been a lot more about this. I think people are hearing a lot more and probably feeling more comfortable. We did a follow-up study that's under review right now with a smaller group of dermatologists who, while they said that they don't necessarily feel super comfortable recommending, they definitely have been learning more over the last couple of years with respect to, you know, what cannabinoids are all about and what they can do. We even did a small study with pediatric dermatologists about their comfort level. And once again, everyone's demanding more information, but it's clear that the education is starting to permeate out there. And the good news, this is another study. I mean, I feel like I'm throwing a ton of studies at you, but another study that we're writing up currently was actually a consumer study, pretty much asking if a dermatologist said to use a cannabinoid-based product, whether it be over-the-counter or dispensary-based, would you do it? And over 60% of respondents said yes. So I think dermatologists are interested, but they're cautious because there's limited information and also limited education. I think consumers, if given the right guidance, they would certainly be willing, but they're already doing it regardless, but they would like us to tell them how to do it. So there's a nice intersection between different needs and gaps that really culminate into we need better research, more education, and we need to fuel the interest that already exists. Because I feel like if we don't deliver, you know, we're obviously doing this podcast, you know, we're doing lectures, we're doing meetings. If we don't deliver on that information, we don't provide that information, I think people will lose interest. And I've seen that with other areas of dermatology, that there's a lot of hype initially, but if you can't keep that momentum going, people are going to kind of give up on it. And I don't blame them, but I don't think that's going to happen here because, you know, especially when you have industry interested in this space and you have drugs coming out that are unique and molecular entities, they're unique, they have a unique mechanism of action. I think that excitement's only going to boil completely over and flood the kitchen, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And can you shed any light on this cannabinoids for fighting corona rumor?
Yeah. So I think, you know, in any crisis, there are opportunities to grow, there are opportunities that you don't want to miss, but there are also opportunities to take advantage. And I think that's a good example of this in terms of sanitizers containing CBD, for example, touting extra benefit against against COVID-19. Sadly, there's no data to suggest that CBD or any other cannabinoid is directly antiviral. There is some evidence that certain cannabinoids may have antibacterial properties, but from a viral perspective, we don't have any information. So throwing CBD into a sanitizer that has 70% or higher ethanol is probably not going to change the fact that that 70% ethanol is going to do the trick. Now, can I spin this around and say, well, maybe there are some positives? Maybe. So if we're thinking about all the hand dermatitis and irritant contact dermatitis we're seeing because of excessive hand washing and hand sanitizer use, could including a cannabinoid, so long as it's stable, is not degraded by the sanitizer that it's in, could that possibly have some rehabilitatory properties in the sense that it could be anti-inflammatory? And we know that CBD, for example, when it binds to its receptor, can instigate pro-resolution of inflammation. So what that means is it's not just about blocking a cytokine like we are so used to. It's about binding to a receptor and signaling for example, the polarization of macrophages to more the resolution phase of inflammatory stage of wound healing, for example, that requires this kind of switching of macrophage type. Is it telling neutrophils stop leaving the vasculature? Is it about telling those macrophages to phagocytose all the damaged, you know, skin cells and dying organisms? You know, so it's kind of like a concert of biological activity that needs to happen to turn off inflammation. And cannabinoids, when they bind to G protein coupled receptors, that specific ones, that certainly can happen. So I could play at both sides and say, well, maybe having CBD in there doesn't make it more antiviral, but maybe it helps limit the damage from the sanitizer. And this is all theoretical, mind you. I have no evidence to support this. On the other side, or even taking a step further, so what is killing people with COVID-19 infection? It's not the infection itself. It is the extraordinary cytokine storm that only occurs in certain people, seemingly more in diabetics or in individuals with endothelial dysfunction from the get-go, or have high sugar, you know, serum sugar levels that can glycosylate ACE2 and possibly interfere with the immune system. Being that cannabinoids are pro resolution of inflammation, could systemic cannabinoids possibly play a role in the future in terms of preventing that intense inflammatory response that's killing people? I mean, we know that monoclonal antibodies, JAK inhibitors are being studied currently to limit the morbidity mortality associated with COVID-19 infection. So could cannabinoids potentially be added to that armament? The answer is probably yes. I mean, we have some interesting clinical data looking at a synthetic cannabinoid called lenabasum for the treatment of scleroderma and dermatomyositis. And this oral form, is pretty effective at minimizing disease. But B, from a biological perspective, the introduction of this cannabinoid systemically actually increases our own endogenous pro-resolution pathway called the resolvins, these small little molecules that when they bind to their G-protein coupled receptors, just like the cannabinoids can do that, that will instigate the resolution of inflammation. And it was seen in the serum of individuals treated compared to those treated with prednisolone that you get upregulation of these resolvins. So I always like to play both sides of it in this case and not just be purely negative and say, absolutely not, this is a gimmick and BS, but maybe there is something there that we can think about that wasn't ever intended by these gimmicky brands that could be actually useful for patients infected with COVID-19.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Friedman. I appreciate your time and you have a great day. For more Dermatology Times content, from articles and videos to podcasts, you can visit www.dermatologytimes.com.